Good morning, and welcome to the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything radio show. And good morning, Ashwini.
Good morning, Chris. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, indeed. All right, so here was our assignment from yesterday. When do you presently experience embarrassment? How old do you feel? Record and listen. And we have a bunch of callers, Ashwini, so shall we?
Excellent. Yep.
All right. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? First caller, you're now live on the air.
Hello.
There you are.
Yeah, oh, hello, Colin here, yeah. I thought I wasn't getting on, sorry. Yes, well, that was embarrassing, wasn't it? There was an embarrassing moment for me. So there we are, I'm experiencing embarrassment. And, with this one, I thought it was quite tricky because at the beginning I was thinking, oh, well, it's only embarrassment, isn't it? It's not a big deal. And it's sort of about being polite and manners or something. And as I was looking at it, I thought it was quite sort of insidious, really, in that there's a projection of judgment and blame and sort of feeling ashamed, really, for having done something, having caused something to happen that shouldn't have happened. And I was remembering, in terms of the age of the person, thinking about a young person, and that, like, blushing, when the face goes red, and losing control of the body, and, yeah, just sort of feeling ashamed and wanting to hide my face. So I thought, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like punishing and beating, isn't it, really?
Yes. Well, would you say that last sentence again, Colin? I'm not sure I followed the last couple of words.
Oh, it's like it's a punishment and a beating.
Yes, exactly. That initially when we look at embarrassment, we go, oh, well, you know, it's not a big deal. But that paying attention to what's going on in embarrassment, whether it's a mild form of embarrassment or deep humiliation, which is shame, it's the same process. And the process is you did something wrong that you should not have done. And that's a judgment that is leveled against someone, and usually that experience feels very young, right? That you made a mistake. You shouldn't have made a mistake. You've made a fool of yourself. And it's a sense of shame, which is only experienced in the conditioned system. Because if we weren't identified with the person to whom that message is being leveled, then everything that happens in life just happens in life. You know, there's no judgment about what happens because it's what happened.
Yes, I guess that's right. But it just seems with the embarrassment, it just allows it to slip by because
it's
just that thing about with social interactions that, I want to be mm-hmm. polite and have good manners or whatever. And it just sort of seems to, like, it's got a justification there for it. It's all right to be embarrassed because it's sort of polite somehow. But it's
yes.
not. It's getting a beating.
Yes. So it's, again, it reveals the social conditioning, right? That being polite is a good person thing to do. You know, you have to be well-behaved in public and appropriate. And if you're not, then you have to be punished in order for you to be appropriate rather than just get to that place of curiosity of what's appropriate here and why do I experience this feeling of being, within quotes, inappropriate? And like we were looking at yesterday, skill is learned. It's mastered. It isn't an experience that's born out of punishment.
Yes, yes. And yes, also there's a sort of creative, a positive sort of learning process rather than a punishment process.
That's right. Yes, it's encouragement that causes us to be curious and want to receive information. punishment that just shuts us down, right? Shame is such an awful way to assist people to be better, within quotes.
Yes. And I suppose, you know, I just sort of really made some recordings. I was, you know, really grateful. That's why I do this practice, so that sort of stuff doesn't pass by unnoticed, because I certainly hadn't noticed it. You know, and wanted to be subjected to that.
Yes. So I think what you started us out with is the most powerful insight for you, where the process of dismissing something as minor, like embarrassment, is what conditioning does in order to distract us from the places in which the process of judgment and punishment are still going on. And so to capture that and remember that there is no occasion for a beating.
Yes, that's right, yes. So, oh, well, thank you very much for that anyway. You appreciate
thanks,
it.
Colin. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks for listening. It's good.
Thanks, Colin. And Ashwini, on that, that last sentence, there really is no cause for a beating ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, none whatsoever.
Just the way it goes, right? Yeah. The other thing was idea of being punished to be appropriate. You know, when we really put it out there like that, it's like that just does not make any sense at all when we bring it into the light of day. And that belief system that punishment makes a good person that we're all probably conditioned into as kids.
Yeah. Well, and then we spend the rest of our lives trying to compensate for that or living from that orientation. In spiritual practice really is to embrace everything that was ever negated or left out of acceptance into acceptance, so that the whole, all of life, all of us, all of the intelligence that animates is what we recognize ourselves to be, as opposed to not that.
Yeah, that's great. And so anytime I'm experiencing embarrassment, guilt, shame, then I can look to see, well, what's being negated here? What's been, you know, I'm conditioned, or the conditioning is to negate something here. And so what is that? And
and how can we bring it back to the all?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, let's check in with our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Chris and Ashwini. This is Jeff, usually in North Carolina, but traveling right now.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. Yeah. I think the first thing that I want to say is that it's just so great to be so immersed in practice in so many ways. And just, you know, having come off a stay at the monastery, and still feeling really immersed in practice. Specifically around embarrassment, well, I guess what I want to say first is just kind of this little series, like so many of the assignments, they're really causing me to look more closely at things and in places that I really haven't paid much attention to, which I think is kind of a fantastic thing about this retreat, this year-long retreat in general, is that embarrassment, I know what embarrassment is, or guilt or whatever. You know, I know what those are, right? Those are the label, and that means, I know, right? I've experienced those things all my life. But to really pay attention to the actual experience on a sensation level and, you know, well, where is that in the body? Or, you know, what is going on? Or to be pointed with the question, how old do I feel right now? So what I did with this one in particular, and I've kind of done some variations of this, is just recorded about different experiences in my life of embarrassment. And, you know, for instance, being in the middle of some conversation with another person or a few people and not having anything to say, or feeling mm-hmm. like I've just said something that was stupid, in quotes, or whatever. So, mm-hmm. and a few others, things like that. But then, so I recorded about those, some of those different experiences of, in quotes, embarrassment. And then I listened back to the recording, and that's where I really kind of tuned into how old do I feel as mm-hmm. I, you know, as I listen to that recording. So I just like that little process of using recording and listening kind of in, you know, in as part of this process of looking at, in this case, embarrassment, but it could be anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're saying, right, Jeff, is a little bit of what Colin started us out with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, embarrassment is something that I know. I know what embarrassment feels. But to look at embarrassment from the place of awareness, from the place of curiosity, to see the process is a completely different thing. You would have to, your attention has to be called to it, to see all of those ways in which we just react from a conditioned place. So something happens, I feel embarrassed. And then we just move on, right? I feel bad for that moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe I think about it a couple of times and then it just happens again. But to bring this level of attention to it allows us to see what's really going on. And your way of bringing attention to it is to recall those instances in which embarrassment happened for you and to listen to it, which in itself is not just a great practice place, but a fabulous place to demonstrate how conditioning works, right? You can just think about that occasion and experience embarrassment. Which points to the process by which it happens, right? Some message comes in and I feel embarrassed. Some message comes in and I feel embarrassed. It doesn't even mm-hmm. have to be happening right now. And if that message comes in, I feel embarrassed, right? That's mm-hmm. the conclusion. And to really recognize how present, how not present we can be in our lives, because all of these experiences have labels and handles, and we automatically just associate those. You know, how real is my experience?
Yeah, yeah. You know, a couple things occurring to me as you're talking. One is that, so conditioning uses that phenomenon that I don't even actually have to be having some interaction with somebody to be experience embarrassment. There can be just some memory of it, mm-hmm. or it can just be playing in the mind. Conditioning uses that to its advantage all the time, we could say. Mm-hmm. But we can also use it to our advantage, like by doing the, you know, so it uses it when there's as an unconscious process, but we can use this to our advantage for awareness as a conscious process. We can deliberately, as we're doing with, you know, really all of this in the year-long retreat, bring these things to conscious awareness so that we can mm-hmm. look at them. We can watch yeah. the process by deliberately bringing this to mind. And the other thing that I'm really interested in and excited about now is, oh, so in these situations where I typically have felt embarrassment, and probably will again, to really be paying attention. Now it becomes an awareness practice, you know, exciting to go, well, how does this, yeah, let's be there. Let's really be here when, mm-hmm. you know, when this comes up again. Now mm-hmm. it becomes, it's just like in the fear book, you know, in those first three pages, now it becomes the hunter rather than the hunted, rather than this, mm-hmm. this experience I really would love to avoid. No. I want to see this. Now it's like exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Conjuring up. So going into the experience that is manufactured by a story with conscious awareness allows us to see the process and unravel some of the beliefs and assumptions and the projections and the aspect of the personality, the experience of how old you are, and really dissect it. And so if we're bringing that level of attention to what's going on for me, then really I am present to what's going on for me rather than just reacting, which is the reason we are tracking it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that we're tracking the experience or hunting the experience because we don't want the experience to happen. We're hunting the experience because it trains us to pay attention and be aware of what's going on with us, which is what we're going for in awareness practice.
Yes, it's the movement from being that small child or whatever, totally unconscious in this case and lost mm-hmm. in the experience, mm-hmm. having this kind mm-hmm. of imaginary reaction mm-hmm. and thinking that's who I am, to mm-hmm. becoming the conscious, compassionate awareness that can be there for that person and who is totally fine in the situation, even really interested and, mm-hmm. you know, even enjoying it, you could say.
Mm-hmm. Being the conscious, compassionate awareness that witnesses the experience rather than the unconscious reaction to the experience. Absolutely. It's a much better place to live.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. All right, well, thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff. Safe travel.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jeff. Ashwini, what was dropping in for me is, as you're describing it, you and Jeff were laying that out, seems like a really great practice, and one of the other things that would do is we get kind of acclimatized to the sensations that would carry the attention off into embarrassment. And so when we're really in one of those real life situations where conditioning is attempting to just that, the odds go way up that we'll be able to stay put, not move into that place of embarrassment and feeling bad, but be able to, like y'all talked about, just real time examine the story, the sensation. How well do I feel, and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is the way to deal with strong emotions.
Yeah.
Is to drop to the level of the sensations. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it won't be such a shock. It will be, we'll be in a familiar place, and so those sensations won't be, they won't have the power that they would normally have, it seems. So,
Yeah.
Very fun. All right, let's see what our next caller is up to. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Jill in Philadelphia.
Hey, Jill.
Hey, Jill.
Hi, Shrini. Hi, Chris. I was actually just thinking, I just went to visit my niece, who's 11, and before I go and visit her, I always read about childhood development at whatever age she's at, just to because whenever I'm around her, I'm like, man, 11-year-olds, they just act like they're insane, you know. But when I read the mm-hmm. child development page about it, it just mm-hmm. talks about, like, it puts what I perceive as insanity into some sort of, you know, context, development context, right? She's not going insane, she's becoming a human being.
That seems to be good to remember, regardless whoever we're around, whatever age. Because as we've just found out, we are all kinds of ages at all times.
That's
11 or 3 or 5 or whatever.
Exactly, and that's what made me think of it in this exercise. Because one of the qualities of an 11-year-old is that they have become hypersensitive to their peers, and they will do anything to not be embarrassed. They just want to conform and fit in, and so it's just being with her and thinking in my own experiences and sort of thinking about when it happens to me now. It's just such an old. It just has such an old pathway, you know. It's such an old feeling, and it keeps getting, you know, it goes through its own the same gymnastics over and over again.
That's a lovely way of describing it, right? It's just the same sequence repeated for an input that's interpreted that way. So, as you said, if it's about making sure we fit in and belong and are not singled out by our peers at 11, that same pathway is just activated when we're in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good to see, you know? It's just so mm-hmm. good to see that I have nothing to do with that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's just the ingredients are all still floating around in me to recreate mm-hmm. that. And
freeze-dried coffee is
sure. It's like freeze-dried coffee, exactly. and yeah, when it gets reconstituted, it feels real. It feels, you know, suddenly I'm mm-hmm. 11 and, you know, everyone's out to get me or embarrass me or whatever. It just feels, yeah, feels real. And so.
Well, and what I appreciated about what you just said, right, Jill, here you are. You're going to spend time with someone you love. You actually make the effort to see if you can get some information about her state of being
mm-hmm.
from which there's such a level of acceptance for whatever it is that she's going through and to come from a supportive place around that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the attitude we want to create. We want to cultivate towards the 11-year-old sitting in the meeting mm-hmm. at a conference in New York City,
right?
But that's not the attitude we have. Like, that person shows up, there's a deep level of embarrassment, there's the beating.
Yes. That somehow, conditioning would have me think this is something that shouldn't be happening. I'm wrong. I'm the wrong person for this to be happening. It's, all of that stuff. But, I love what has been said about, for me it's about I just try and go into the body and go into the breath and just allow my. It's funny because I feel like when that happens to me in a meeting. So you're absolutely right. Then it it I'm sort of like, okay, nothing is more important in this meeting than me reconnecting with the mentor. Nothing is. I could get fired. I don't care. It's that whole end of the after meditation recitation. It's like, I'm here to end suffering. Like, I have to do this. And so oftentimes it means taking pauses, whatever. And nobody notices. Nobody cares.
Yes.
Like,
Everybody's having the same experience you are, right? All these 11-year-olds sitting in a meeting.
Exactly. Everyone's just as terrified.
Well, and I project, right, Jill, in some way that we don't know how, that ability to go to a place of compassion for you and saving you, saving the person that's there, becomes the focus of our attention. And so, as you said, everything else takes a lower priority. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's not as important, right? Rather than being in compassion in every moment, and in doing that, in giving yourself permission, somehow or the other, that translates to every other 11-year-old in the room, right? It's what we didn't get, and so to have someone be able to do that energetically, it's a way of giving everybody permission to do that. And that's where we stop being 11-year-olds, right? Rather than the awareness collapsing on me, there's that awareness that expands and includes everyone else.
Yeah, that's really, I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you're saying that, I mean, I've experienced it when I've been in meetings and people have taken a deep breath and, suddenly I'm taking a deep breath and it's just this permission to just return. And also too, I mean, I'm not doing this out of sainthood. I really feel like this is the only way out. It's the only way out. It's the only way to end suffering. And I can actually come back to the meeting, I mean, this used to be something where, the whole day was shot or the whole week was shot because of something like this. And now it's like I lose 5 seconds of my life,
Oh, so important. So important that it is actually the only way. In fact, sainthood is the only way. You don't do it for sainthood. But pretty much, right? Because being an ego-identified human being is no picnic. And it takes that level of practice and focus that you were talking about, which is what sainthood really is, mm-hmm. right? The ability to go up against all of those forces of mm-hmm. egocentricity and choose something else in every moment.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, like everything else, sainthood isn't what everyone thinks it is.
It's not the halo and
the
wall, right?
No.
It's a life lived a particular way that gets recognized.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting. This was a great exercise. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks. Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jill.
Bye-bye.
So Shwini, as Jill was talking to start with, about how excruciating it was to not want to do anything embarrassing around your peers. I think I took a quick trip back that direction and got a shot of that excruciating those sensations. And was just looking at how even, you know, because I consider that I had a happy childhood, but even in that, you know, I can go back and find those places where it's excruciating. And so hence the conditioning at this point. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would project, right, Chris, it's got nothing to do with, I mean, it's got everything to do with what we all experience all the time, which is that identifying with ego is just a byproduct of socialization and conditioning, right? It happens to all of us, and we are able to be in that natural state of authenticity, and we actually oscillate between those spectrums in different degrees throughout the day. And all practices not to feel bad about that and to up our chances of spending more time at a context from which there's nothing wrong with our experience.
Yeah, not to spend any time in why am I conditioned in this way, or I don't really have anything that's that bad to complain about. But yeah, to be able
and
to
then,
move to compassion in relation to all of that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do one more. Hold on. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Chris. Hi, Ashwini. This is Bev from Kentucky.
Hey, Bev.
Hi, Bev.
I'm just so happy to be here, and I really don't have much to share. Everyone that has spoken today, I just feel like they're speaking for me, you know. I just see how I'm seeing more and more, especially with embarrassment, how the voices are just trying to rob me of the joy of my life, of just being here, living my life here in this world every day. And it's just such a gift to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is such a gift to see, and we could say it's with anything like shame or guilt or embarrassment or fear or any of those things, that the voices are simply robbing us of the ability to be here for our lives.
Yes, exactly.
And it's so
and
good
to
see that.
One thing I've noticed, I get this message of urgency, like everything, no matter how big or how small, everything is so urgent. I even noticed recently when my cell phone will get near the end, it'll be running low on battery. I get these like warnings, like the world is ending, these flashing and critical, you know, and I'm just thinking that's everywhere. And so I really have to slow myself down and say, no, just come back, just come back, just come back. So all of this is just such a great reminder to me of where I need to be, which is right here. So I so appreciate all this.
Yes. Yeah. And it's when we start paying attention at this level, right, of whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm paying attention to the how of it, then you can see patterns like urgency, right, which is the way, which is sort of the primary way that you're looking at right now, that the attention gets moved away from the present moment and the pace of life and the enjoyment of it to this sense of departing from that, to be tense, to be urgent, to be in control, to act, and to just realize it's that place, right, Bev, we talk about where the awareness is the transformation, and then because we have that awareness, we're able to choose something else that maintains the awareness, perpetuates that awareness rather than collapses it. And so to know urgency is something that conditioning can use to control you, to really, really practice becoming aware of that conversation and taking that breath that allows you to slow down and just be here.
Right. And the biggest thing, one of the things I really took away from being at the monastery is how the whole system is set up for us to pay attention. You know, something as simple as changing your shoes, or there are no clocks, so you have to pay attention to the time on yourself. And I find that that's where I go off the rails, is when I'm not paying attention. So that's just been a great lesson for me as well. So thank you so much for all this. I know we're at, you know, end of the program, but just deep gosh, for everyone, and just such a gift to me. So thank you.
Thanks, Bev.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Bev.
I just love it when people who come to the monastery really recognize how the entire setup is assistance to pay attention. It's actually so, it so reveals our attitude of mind when we start to appreciate structures that support us.
Yeah, because we're so accustomed to the structure of conditioning, which does not support us.
That's right, exactly. And yeah, you often have to get past that in order to recognize that life is supportive, because that's the lens through which you're looking.
Yeah, life is supported, life is friendly, life has our best interests at heart always in every way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was appreciating what she was saying about finding urgency and how and again, having been at the monastery, it's like the awareness levels drop that little bit or a lot, and then we can see something like that. And it does seem like a version of hidden in plain sight. Once we see it, it's like, oh my, look at all of that in every location. Yeah. All right, well, have we done it?
I think so. I believe so. I think we're at time. And what's our assignment, Chris?
Okay. Our assignment for today is, when do you presently experience envy? Mm-hmm. And how old do you feel? Record and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then assignments
Wonderful.
On both Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, wonderful indeed.
Thank you so much, Chris, and we'll talk to everyone on Monday.
All right. Thanks, Ashwini, and everyone. Go happy.
Take care. Go happy.
Bye-bye.